We never seem to be able to escape politics. Recently, Nikki Haley officially launched her presidential campaign, and soon perhaps we may hear of other political campaigns, or candidates rather, in the running alongside Haley and former President Trump. It's hard to believe, but the 2024 elections may soon be on us and in the news. What issues really matter to conservative Americans in November 2024 and beyond? Tim Head is the executive director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and his organization does much to mobilize the faith voters to vote their biblical values, something we need very much. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we welcome Tim Head back to the program. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Of course. Always great to be with you, Jerry. Thanks for having us.
Sure. You know, it's funny. It seems like, okay, well, there's the midterms, and then there's a big push on the politics. And then, now here we are with this sort of a short respite, but now we're already thinking in terms of the 2024 presidential elections. Wow. Is that around the corner, essentially?
Well, I don't even know if it's around the corner. I think it's probably it's probably upon us, at least kind of latently, and it'll probably this summer, I would say in May or June, that'll become part of the 24-hour cycle. But it's really happening now.
Okay, so that I can just basically have us lay a foundation of basic American civics just for a minute or two about the constitutional principles and why Christians should be involved in the whole political process, certainly in terms of finding out as much as they can about the candidates and then supporting the good ones who stand for biblical values, even if they personally might not even be committed to Jesus Christ in their own hearts. But in reality, the policies that they promote and they would vote for would comport with the biblical worldview. So help us lay a foundation, and then we'll get into Haley and Trump and others.
Well, even the phrasing of your question, I found very satisfying and insightful there, while we certainly would love for all office holders, and we're in this context, presidents, to really carry faith in their own heart and mind, I do think, and certainly that would be most advantageous for them personally, I think the kind of public policy exercise and political exercise, it's important for us to know that we're looking for results and public policy positions, right? So, it doesn't do us any good if somebody does carry those values in their own heart, but once they get into office, they don't effectuate them, or they carry them in their heart, but they can't get elected. You're trying to find people that can get into those positions and who will then, kind of deliver on those promises in the form of actual public policy or government. And so I basically think of civics and really what we do at Faith and Freedom Coalition as an exercise in stewardship. Each of us individually as citizens, we're really kind of this is a major blessing for us to be to live in an era in human history, and for that matter, live in a place on this planet Earth that our voice can actually make a difference. And if we kind of sit on the sideline, our voice is muzzled or muted. So it's important for us to exercise those rights and to employ these principles and values in a very strategic and effective way. So that's why I think of it as stewardship. It's not that we're trying to like institute some theocracy. We're trying to use our worldview and our principles to shape our government and our public policy in a way that honors God and brings freedom and prosperity to, first of all, people in America and eventually to people around the world.
Okay, and how about a comment about the Founding Fathers and the framework that they set up? And really the privilege it is to be in part of this, to be a part of the process, including just voting itself, to have our own say in our own government.
Well, I mean, bear in mind the founders, first of all, were coming from a process that was parliamentary, that there was a parliamentary system. So there was an element of kind of a republic, if you will. But Parliament is a little bit different. It has similarities, but it's a little different than what we currently have in the United States, a United States House of Representatives, a Senate, and then a presidency, and then a judiciary system, as well as states. And so they built even more checks and balances into this system. But all of this really is predicated, first of all, you have to say, on the dignity and the value of the individual person versus, United Kingdom and England, really predicated on the value of the aristocracy and particularly royalty. So instead of valuing one sort of lineage like the United Kingdom system does, it values and really elevates the value of every single individual citizen. Which obviously has its roots in a biblical worldview, particularly a Protestant kind of evangelical reading of Scripture, where we're all kind of seen as priests, if you will, a member. We're all priests. And there's not a singular or a limited number of priests. So the roots of our American system really do have categorically. The values are predicated on biblical precepts, and they're even kind of loosely built around some Old Testament models that were even demonstrated in Israel, in the governance of Israel centuries ago.
Yeah, you're right. Like, for example, the Puritans of New England, they left England, Old England, and they tried to create the New Jerusalem in the, New England. But, they failed in creating the New Jerusalem. But in the process, they really helped shape a lot of what was positive in America to come. Now, let's fast forward to today. Since you're dealing mostly with Christian people, it is often said, and maybe this is a thing of the past, I hope, but it is often said that there are many professing Christians who are not even registered to vote. I know that that has been said in the past. Is that still even true, at least in some pockets?
Well, it is. It does remain the case. It's a little bit hard to get the numbers of the unknown numbers, because the people who are unknown are sort of unknown for a reason. It's pretty hard to be unknown in the year 2023. So you're driving pretty hard to stay off the radar. But I would say, first of all, I'll just say kind of broadly across the political landscape. Over the last roughly 40 years now, our numbers suggest that between 35% and 37% of each national electorate, so that's either the presidential election or if in an off year, a reading of all state elections, governors, U.S. senators, about 35% to 37% are either evangelicals, faithful Roman Catholics, so regular attendees, or kind of another small striation of some other.
Okay, when you're saying this 35% to 37%, are you saying these are potential voters or voters?
These are actual voters. So this is
that is huge, is it not?
It's by far, it's the largest single constituency in American politics. Okay. So
like, could it be larger? In other words, are there many that are, for whatever reason, sitting it out?
It's a great question. They're kind of disaffected for a variety of reasons. Some of those are kind of, what we really find is a lot of them are in the Rust Belt. And then some of them are in kind of the deep South. So very rural areas, for instance, in like Alabama, Mississippi, some places in Tennessee that they don't think that their vote really moves the needle either. If they vote for a Republican in president, it doesn't really matter because Tennessee is going to go red. If we vote for a Republican in the governorship in Alabama, it doesn't matter because it'll go red. So we do think that there are certainly more to be found, and we saw more, register in 2016. But actually finding those. So we basically have been in the process. We're now perpetually in the process at Faith and Freedom of registering new voters in strategic states across the country. But it's a bit of a needle in the haystack. So we go 12 months a year, 24 months per cycle. We're constantly registering churches and kind of other community centers, et cetera.
Now, obviously, there have been some disappointments with things like the the senatorial rematch in Georgia, where, you know, the man that won was claiming to be Christian, but very pro-abortion. But let's go ahead and shift over to the election, the presidential nominees. Nikki Haley, announced recently that she's going to run for president. And of course, former President Trump announced a few months ago that he would. Let's begin, I guess, if you would, with Joe Biden. Do you realize, Tim, I know you know this because you're so well informed, there was actually a group, and they even tried to say this with a straight face, that they were quote-unquote evangelical pro-lifers for Biden. And then Biden, we knew Biden was pro-abortion rights, but he has become so pro-abortion where even his FBI is used sometimes as, third world type, shenanigans where they're trying to go after pro-lifers, peaceful pro-lifers, because they don't agree, you know, with abortion rights. It's astounding.
It is astounding. So you know, it's interesting you bring that kind of pro-lifers for pro-life Republicans, even for Biden. So one of the takeaways on the Democratic side in 2016, coming out of the 2016 cycle, was by basically completely ceding the evangelical and faithful Catholic vote. There was not one staffer in the Hillary Clinton campaign that was working on faith voters. And these elections are frequently won on the margins. And so what they learned is zero effort toward the faith vote, and even hostility and messaging against. You remember, of course, the basket of deplorables, irredeemables, etc. So there was an effort, a renewed effort, a pretty nominal effort, to be honest, but a renewed effort to at least not ostracize pro-life voters and faithful voters. And really, it wasn't because they thought they were going to win. They were just trying to kind of like stem the tide, or kind of, you know, plug the dam a little bit there. And that's what that candidate, or that small kind of micro campaign, was just to say, hey, look, you know, there's six of us. So, you know, some of y'all that maybe don't like Trump should think about us again. It was kind of a head fake or a quasi campaign. But nonetheless, it was present. So, but as it relates to their efforts, I mean, I will say that so I would expect a different running mate. I would be surprised if Kamala is the vice presidential running mate again. There's basically no metric in any of American politics that suggests that she's adding to the efforts of the Biden team. So I do suspect that they'll kind of find a golden parachute for her to move on to and replace her with someone, to be determined who that person could be. But then secondly, as it goes to the Biden team itself, the weaknesses of Biden are pretty obvious to anybody who's even casually paying attention. But you have to really recognize that under the water's surface, there are some very powerful players at play who got him into this position and want to keep him in that position. So the fight isn't necessarily like, can Joe Biden personally beat, you know, say, Gavin Newsom personally? It's, can the forces behind Joe Biden resist the forces behind Gavin Newsom?
I see what you mean. Okay, we have less than 1 minute to go. How about a comment about Nikki Haley and President Trump, since both of those were thrown in their hats? 45 seconds.
We'll probably see two new names a month for the next 3 or 4 months. You know, Trump has an incredibly strong record. There's no doubt about that. Clearly some challenges around kind of messaging and his persona. Nikki Haley is very formidable. The question is, how much money can she raise? And so I think that there's certainly a lot of drama to be watched over these next, between now and say June. I think we'll see the campaign crystallize probably by July the 1st, we'll say, of this year, who the candidates will be.
All right. Timothy Head, FFCoalition.com for more information. Thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you. God bless.